Valley Local News Radio, 97.5 KTBB FM, True Tyler Longview, KTBB Tyler, and KTBB.com. It's 7 o'clock. This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of In Focus, heard weekends on KTBB 97.5 FM and KRWR, the Team 92.1 FM. You can join us each week as we interview those who help Tyler and Longview residents make their lives better. And as always, you can reach out with your thoughts on the show or any topic you would like us to consider airing at ktbb.com/infocus. My guests today, I have two of them. They're Emily Hegland and Karen Kilgore, both with the SPCA. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how are things at the SPCA? What's going on?
Busy. We are perpetually busy, it feels like, but things are going well. We have closed our intake right now because we are basically at capacity as far as taking in the homeless animals of the Tyler area. And so we're really asking for the public's help to come and consider becoming a foster home or a donor or a volunteer with us so you can help out.
That's a great place to start. So at times the SPCA can be full. Could you kind of just explain to the audience, let's give out your URL first and then explain to the audience like what full means with the SPCA and what it looks like. And y'all's new spot is out on 31, is that right?
We're at 3245 West Grande Boulevard.
Oh, okay.
Kind of close to the intersection of Grande and 155.
Okay.
So that's our new facility out there. Been in there a little less than a year, I would say, about a year. I've been on board for 3 weeks now. This is my third week as we speak, and Karen's been there much longer. And basically, we are primarily a foster-based rescue. So the animals that we take in and care for and try to adopt out, most of those are placed in volunteer foster homes in the area. And Karen is our foster home coordinator, and she can talk about how to become a foster home with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, when you foster dog or cat for the SPCA, we provide all of the supplies. The vetting is done through the SPCA. The food, the kennel, the crate, the bowls, the toys all come with the animal. And your job as a foster is to love and socialize. Tell us as much as you can about the animal, the dog, cat, or kitten, puppy, and also provide photos. And so you help us find that perfect fit home. We don't go with the first adoption application for an animal. We're looking for the best fit. So our fosters are really the backbone of our organization. You can go to our website, www.spcaeasttx.com, and go to the resource tab that says how you can help. Fill out a quick foster application, and we will look if you have other animals in the home. We want to make sure that they are vetted appropriately. Then we'll set up a meet and greet for you to come and pick out your next foster.
What kind of interest do you have in this program? Do you have a hard time finding enough people, or do you have more people than you could ever imagine that are interested?
We can always use more fosters, absolutely. We have some fosters that are seasonal. Perhaps they're out of school during the summer, they teach during the year, and they'll come and pick a couple of pups up to foster. We always have a great need for big dog, large breed fosters. When the SPCA goes out on a rescue, we do not cherry pick just the smalls and the puppies. We take everybody on site, and oftentimes those are, in terms of animals, oftentimes those are large breeds, and that we have a harder time finding fosters for those.
Most of our animals are coming to us either as strays or animals that have been dumped and someone calls and says, I've got a litter of puppies on my doorstep or on the road. I don't know what to do with them. Some are owner surrenders. And then some are cruelty investigations that are handled mainly through law enforcement, and we come in to assist with them. But we do have a combination of ways that we get animals that come in and then, have to find foster homes to take them in and help them become rehabilitated so they can find an adoptive home.
How difficult is it to rehabilitate a pet that's, say, 3 years old?
I think it depends on what that animal's background is and what their experiences have been. I mean, if they've been astray and they've struggled through life and been abandoned, they probably do have some things they need to heal from. But we have some wonderful trainers and behaviorists that we work with. Allison Tuttle with Canine Connections is a fantastic resource for us, and she volunteers her time quite a bit to come in and work with our larger breed dogs, especially that have higher needs before they can go to a forever home. And then, you know, if they're younger and, you know, not as experienced in life and they're just little puppies or kittens, then it's a little bit easier to adopt those animals out.
So a question I've had, I mentioned before we started the show that my office mate and I have two rescues that we got from the same place. And they were only 4 weeks old, covered in fleas. They were, you know, big as a teacup, and they're both 80 pounds now. I've often wondered, could those puppies have remembered their trauma of being dumped? Is it possible, or do they forget?
Ooh, that I don't know. That'd probably be a behaviorist question. Obviously, the younger, as Emily said, less life experiences, the more trusting and probably rehab quicker. I really don't know. I'd have to defer to behaviorist on that one.
It's just interesting because they both have they're sisters, and you know, different nurturing, but nature has them like both dogs. If you have something in your hand, will not come to you. They're just not gonna move, and both of them are like that, and they haven't been around each other at all. And so I think that's what kind of interested me about the behavioral aspect of a dog that's been abandoned or abused, or because I mean, let's face it, you don't get dogs and cats that are just living the life and all of a sudden go to SPCA.
I think sometimes those experiences do run deep. Like, it makes me think about dogs that come in that may have had a bad experience with water, even as a young dog, may be difficult to interact with water going forward, whether it's through a bath or you take them to the lake and they just don't want to go near it. So yeah, I think it really depends heavily on the age of the dog and their experiences and what they've gone through.
I was digressing. Let's get back on subject here. What I guess the biggest thing the SPC needs really is money.
Well, that would be fantastic. We would love to have as many donors on board as we can. And the thing I always say is every amount counts. So we don't ever want a potential donor to think that, well, I can only give X amount or Y amount. I mean, every amount that we receive is important to us because, you know, providing for the animals that we have in our care and for the animals in foster homes. I mean, we're a large program and you know, we need to partner with our community. So it's very important.
What percentage of your staff are volunteer?
We have a tremendous volunteer program. We have about 18 or 20 on board as staff right now. I mean, running this whole program from animal care to transport coordination to foster homes and adoptions and
Snippet Clinic.
The Snippet Clinic. We also have an in-house clinic that offers low-cost vaccinations and wellness packages for all the pets of the community, whoever wants to come through the door. So, those are an amazing group of people that work as staff, but our volunteer group is also really special. And I think we have, I want to say, I'm only in my third week, but I want to say somewhere about 40 or 50 active volunteers right now that they're incredible. They come in and work the front desk and take calls. They walk dogs. They run animals through to Snippet Clinic. They just do all kinds of things that help us function.
Is that a rewarding thing to volunteer for, or do they find themselves? I mean, it's a combination of rewarding and sad situation because every day can't be roses.
I can tell you some of them have volunteered for 6-7 years. They keep coming back. If you just realize the value that you can give, whether it's cleaning a kennel, answering a phone, you know, some days are harder than others, there's no doubt, but I feel like, again, just because of the amount of time that people are giving and have been there, that is, you know, is a very rewarding job. You know, you're impacting that dog or cat's life forever. You're getting them a forever home because of the volunteer activities that you're doing.
And silly question, but it's just dogs and cats, right?
That's correct.
Not other kinds of animals.
No.
So how many dogs and cats do you have when you're at capacity?
Right, it's about 200. 200 is our capacity for several reasons. Well, we have an intake area. When new animals come in, we have to make sure they're healthy. That's a smaller subset. Then we do have some animals on site awaiting foster. But to feed 200 large breed dogs and puppies and to do the vetting appropriately, which would be heartworm, flea, tick, spay, neuter, vaccines. 200 is about our tops that we that our program can handle at a time.
So when you're full, you're just not able to have more intake of animals, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Until one is adopted.
Mm-hmm. Or until we have more foster homes sign up.
Okay.
Or until we go on transport.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's really threefold. Mm-hmm.
Well, guys and girls, if you're listening, you can make a difference then by going down there and either volunteering to foster or picking up a pet. I'd note their experience that any of these rescue pets are, I've been shocked at how the kind nature and just, I don't know, overall gratefulness that none of my other dogs have ever had because, you know, they've all had an easy street. But the SPCA, what separates that from like other programs, similar programs? What separates the SPCA?
I think primarily that, that we're a foster-based rescue, and a lot of animal welfare groups are doing the same thing. But our foster homes and our team over there are the ones that really make a difference. I mean, I think that's another reason why our volunteers tend to stay as long as they do, is that it's incredibly rewarding, and you become part of this community of people that are all working toward the same cause. And so we just want to, you know, to be community partners with folks, individuals, and families here, and also other rescue groups, and try to work together and really encourage people to invest in responsible pet ownership, spaying and neutering, taking care of their annual shots, their animals' annual shots and wellness. It's incredibly important. It's a community health issue. So I think we're hopefully leading the charge and getting that message out there.
So if I wanted to adopt a corgi, I mean, no problem. You know, they can fit anywhere. But when you do a foster out, not adopt, excuse me, when you foster out a dog that's 80 pounds or above, which is a pretty good sized dog, and I know that they can go all the way up to 200 depending on the breed, do you make sure that there's room for these dogs to roam wherever they're going, or can they be in a one bedroom apartment if the person wants to foster them there?
So it depends on the animal, but we do have fosters that live in apartments. Some are active, some are runners. I had a guy that was an avid runner, and he had a Loki the German Shepherd, and it worked out great. Now, if we do foster out bully breeds, you talked about you have a pity. We're pity people. We require fencing for that. Most apartments will not allow pit bull to be in an apartment. Most apartment homes will not allow pit bull. So we do require our bullies do have fencing. But, I mean, it depends on the dog. You can get a giant Great Dane that would love the apartment life to lay around. So it just really is about the activity level of the foster and what the needs are for the dog.
Is bully a new name for a mutt?
Now, we call any of our bully breeds pit bull, bulldogs, Staffordshire, terrier. Okay. That's kind of the generic bully term.
Because they take up all of TikTok.
Yeah, yeah.
Bully talk. They're on bully dog TikTok.
Yeah. I mean, and I can watch that endlessly. And that's all my feed is, really, because they're so unusual. So many unusual physical characteristics that they do, setting up. You know, my dog will lay on her back and chew her toy in the air, you know, with her feet. And so I was just wondering that. A pity and a bully. You said pity and bully.
We kind of use that interchangeably. Pit bull terrier, but there's different types. There's American Staffordshire Terriers within that group. Bulldogs, American Bulldogs. We just call them bullies.
From the short, really over muscular. There's a great question for you guys. Can these breeders breed these dogs to a point where it's not a happy life for the dog?
Oh, yeah. Any breeder can do that. I guess I've been doing this 28 years. Probably some of the American bullies, the short, super stocky, barrel-chested.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I would think they'd have a lot of difficulties.
Do they have shorter life expectancies?
Difficulty breathing, just all of it. You know, any large breed dog has a shorter lifespan than a Chihuahua. But, yeah, there are good breeders out there, and there are horrible breeders out there. And
I guess so. Have y'all seen where they have crossbred, I guess, leopards? DNA with dogs.
Oh, my goodness.
Or lions. That's have you not seen the dogs with the manes? Yeah, guys,
no,
haven't seen that?
No. Sounds like an urban legend.
No, I see them all the time on my feed. Like, I guess they could be painting all of them. I don't know, but
that's wild.
It's crazy, and that's what kind of brought up the whole breeder thing. So, so the bullies aren't necessarily a more violent breed. They're just that line of dogs from the
it's more of a
short
nickname
husky
to refer.
Runs all the way up to the boxers.
Right. Yes. Right.
Okay. All right. Let's change it to canines for a minute. Since I'm a dog guy, so let's talk about cats. Okay. Same rules for the cats as the dogs?
Pretty much. The foster homes and the adopters all, have to demonstrate they can meet the animal's needs. But, we have a lot of folks that love to foster cats. We have even some, the really incredible ones will take on whole litters or nursing mothers, and some will do bottle feeding. I mean, we have some really dedicated fosters in that regard that will come in and really help take care, because, there's a term that in the animal welfare world in the spring, they call it kitten season, when you tend to see more litters of kittens coming around. So we have some really incredible fosters that will take on those types of families.
So are you considered a rescue-oriented business, I guess, the SPCA?
I mean, we're a nonprofit animal welfare, yes, rescue and adoption.
You used the word welfare, and I was thinking rescue.
Yes, but yes.
But similar meanings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So back to our cats. Our cat foster homes, they have to, obviously their animals in the home have to be vetted, but we do indoor only and we don't declaw. So those are our two big things.
Thank
our
you
cats.
For that.
Yeah.
So you have to, you can't declaw the cat. Mm-hmm. You have to, the cats are the only one with the only inside deal, right?
That's correct.
Not the dogs.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So you have to agree to keep the cat inside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else?
Current animals in the home need to be vetted, and that would be it.
Mm-hmm. Not a certain amount of animals can be too many. Like, would you let somebody foster six animals?
If they're a nursing mom and kittens, yes. But as a rule, no, not an adult cat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And does fostering? Because I would think that anytime you'd be out of a 2x2 cage, and in any house, it would be better than the cage. Is that, do you find the animals are sad when they leave their foster care, or is it they go to another place and they just immediately get happy again?
I think we see a little bit of everything. I mean, especially in the dogs. Dogs, bond to their families. And I'm sure sometimes it is confusing, why I had to come here. But ultimately, I mean, that's what's best for the animal. And that's something else I think we try to emphasize to our adopters, and I've seen us talk about this, is giving that animal time and being patient and working with them and giving them time to adjust, because it does take time. They do have feelings, and they don't always understand what's going on. So really, as an adopter and someone who's interested in, the best chance for your pet, giving them that time to adjust and settle into your family is really important.
What feelings do dogs have?
I mean, I think we see in our dogs, everything from, they're very intelligent. I think they can easily be confused. They can be upset. They can be happy, sad. So, just trying to help them through those transitions and get them to the best life possible. That's what we're all about.
Can you see anxiety on their face?
Oh, I definitely think they get nervous. Mm-hmm. Anytime there's something unknown, you can see that they're nervous. But we have, again, great caregivers and just try to give them the best experience possible.
Our IT guy is like the dog whisperer here, and we go to him for everything. And he's always fascinated me about how he understands dog behavior as it pertains to other dogs also. And watching the way they contort their body, the way they look, the way they, are they high, are they low, are they on their back, are they whatever. And it's interesting to me how much they communicate that way with each other, and they try to communicate with us, which makes me think we're the dumb ones because they know what they're trying to get across, but because they don't have a vocal cord, I guess they can't say it. But
it's interesting when you think about that, when you get into that world. We also have behind our facility there on West Grande, we have the Bossard Bark Park, which is an 8-acre park for community dogs. And we have several different fenced in areas where people can bring their pets. And it's interesting to watch the body language there, because I know my own dog, I have one dog, and I take her there and she wants to play, I mean, right off the bat. And I think sometimes she comes on a little too strong and the other dogs are like, just back off for a minute and give me a sec, you know, to get in here. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing watching them together.
Where is this park located?
It is right at the same location, right behind our building there on West Grande, and the entrance is kind of right next to our driveway. So
that's,
if you
not
come,
real far from the other dog park.
That's correct. It's not too far from Sunrise, huh?
Well, what are the benefits of taking your dog to the dog park?
I mean, for me, you know, like I said, I only have one dog. And so for me, it's socialization and letting her be around other animals, other people, just getting new experiences and learning how to interact with other animals. I mean, that kind of socialization is really priceless for our pets.
Do you do much with TheraPet?
Have we worked with TheraPet? I'm in week three, so you tell us.
No. So we've done several things in the past with TheraPet, from promoting their programs, because there's a lot of great rescue dogs that will make great TheraPets. So we've worked absolutely. They're a wonderful group. Yeah.
So
they do great work.
So the TheraPet could be a rescue animal.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Sometimes maybe even better. They're lonely and scared. Two.
Yeah. Usually, like you talked about, a lot of the rescues are super humble, grateful, pleasers, you know. But yeah, TheraPet is a great group, and they oftentimes will work with rescues.
I found out you could get a prescription for a therapy dog. Like, you can just get a piece of paper that said, this is a therapy dog.
Are you considering that for your, do you need a therapy dog?
Well, no, what happened, my girlfriend's a counselor. And so she told me she had the ability to write a prescription for a therapy dog. And I'm a cynic. So I'm immediately thinking, as a shop owner, if you come in with a dog I don't want, I'll say, you need to get that dog out of there. And you show me a letter, I'll be like, who's this counselor? You know, but I believe in that therapy pet. Our boss, Paul Gleiser, his daughter works with dogs that are therapy pets. And it's... I don't know if there's a better use for a pet, you know.
Absolutely.
Than that.
They do some great work in hospitals and nursing homes. And, yeah, if I find the right dog that enjoys that kind of thing, it's a great fit.
Yeah, they're just way nicer than people. Let's give out the URL again for SPCA.
You can find us at spcaeasttx.com.
What's the fall look like for you guys? Do you have anything coming up in the fall, any events or...
We do have a trunk or treat coming up on, I believe it's going to be October 26th. They're on West Grande at our facility, and I think it's at the Bark Park. Mm-hmm. And so we're planning that right now. And then our Fur Ball, which is our big annual fundraiser, is in the spring. So definitely look for, follow us on social media. We have a Facebook page, and we need followers. So go find us on Facebook, SPCA East Texas, and look for information about the trunk or treat.
What's a trunk or treat?
It's kind of like a Halloween event where folks can park and have different themed booths and give out candy.
Trunk? I don't get it, though.
The trunk? The trunk of your car.
The trunk of your car.
Oh,
they park
and
open up their trunk.
And so it's geared for the animals. And so the animals will come through, and the trunkers will hand out dog bones and rawhide, you know, homemade toys. So it's kind of like a church carnival, but for the animals.
Mm-hmm. And then your spring event,
The Fur Ball.
The Fur Ball. Let's talk about that for a second. What is that like?
This will be the first one I've been to coming up next year, but the...
you're new to everything.
I'm new to everything. The Fur Ball is our annual fundraiser, and it's a dinner.
It's a dinner, silent auction, live auction, dancing.
Did people bring their pets?
No, we bring a couple of our selected rescues to go around and mingle with the crowd, but it's really for
okay, it's
for
a philanthropic
people.
Event.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, I got that. That makes sense. Okay, so you've got that Fur Ball, and that is in what month?
April.
Mm-hmm. And where is it going to be again?
We're still deciding on location.
I think our development committee is still working on the 2025 event, but we're going to be doing that in the spring. And then also East Texas Giving Day, I know, is big here in Tyler, and we're a part of that as well. So if you can't make it to any of our events, then you can look for us online at East Texas Giving Day.
if you had to speak directly to a potential donor or contributor as to why they should contribute to the SPCA, would both of you mind in your own way answering that question?
Absolutely. I think I would say that the work that we're doing is community work. It's important for the community. And I know there are a lot of great nonprofits and, you know, welfare groups here in the Tyler area. But we're a big part of that, too. And I think about not just the pets of people in the community, but stray animal overpopulation. You know, as we all know, stray animals can create traffic hazards. There can be issues with, you know, stray animals and wild animals. Interactions. It's just a better thing to address this directly and try to take care of this pet overpopulation problem. And that's the work that we're doing every day, is trying to, to benefit these animals. So I would hope that our donors and supporters and our volunteers would see it as really community work that we're doing. And so it's not just limited to animals. It's for the benefit of the whole community.
Okay.
And I'd probably also say, in terms of the health benefits for potential adopters and fosters, it just makes for a healthier community, a healthier person, whether it's blood pressure, whether it's having that dog to get out, you know, to get you to get out and walk. So also, I have to mention one other program, and it's called Pets for Vets. We have a program specifically designed for veterans. We match make rescue dogs with armed services veterans that perhaps need a companion for PTSD, mobility, emotional support, and we've just adopted out three in the last, it's no charge to the veteran, and we've adopted out three in the last 2 months, and that is made possible. Fresh 15 gave us a grant, Brookshire Grocery gave us a grant to help lead that program to get the animals trained up. These are large breed dogs that would oftentimes have a hard time getting placed. So there's a lot of benefits to being a supporter, and, you know, that's a huge one.
What's the deal with the large breed dogs? They just take up more space and people don't want to do that?
You know,
because they're actually, to me, they're less of a nuisance. I'm not saying dogs are nuisance, but they're less of a nuisance than little dogs. Because they're typically a little bit more laid back.
You know, I think they can be a little bit harder to care for, because they do need exercise. Mm. So a large breed dog, you need either a fenced-in yard or someone that's going to walk, you know, walk the dog regularly. You know, little dogs, you can throw a ball across the down the hallway or across the house, and it's almost the same. But, yeah, larger breeds, and they just kind of tend to have a few more needs to take care of.
I think my last question will be, what is the best thing we can do, the public can do, when we find a stray?
Oh, goodness. I know that it's a difficult situation, because people who are compassionate and want to help animals, I mean, the last thing you want to do is leave a stray wherever you're seeing them, or by the side of the road or in your yard. You know, I would encourage people to try to do what they can to help. And I'm not saying, you know, they have to...
Don't call animal
control. Go to the moon. Well, you can just call around to some rescue groups. I mean, try to find... You never know who's going to have an opening. If we have a transport, for example, that leaves to go up north, and, you know, we may have some capacity. So just try to make some phone calls and try to help, and just see what you can do. I mean, it takes all of us working together to help solve this problem.
Maybe check, look at your Facebook page and reach out.
Mm-hmm. Check for a microchip. A lot of people don't put collars on their animals, bathe their animals, don't put their collars back on. You can go to a vet's office, you can go to the SPCA, check it for a microchip, which would identify, you know, perhaps the owner. And then there are some Facebook pages around, Lost and Found of East Texas, where people will put missing dogs and found dogs on to try to match make.
And clearly any decent vet's not going to charge you to scan a tag.
That's correct.
For a stray.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, anyone know it.
Well, that's good to know, because I've always wondered if we're doing the right thing by taking that dog, because it might be two houses down from where it lives, and you don't know that. All you do is see a dog outside without an owner, and you want to do the right thing, but really, in doing the right thing and taking that dog, if some kind of communication's not made, you've actually exacerbated the problem.
But you've taken that animal that may otherwise be hit by a car, wander away. That is actually putting it in a better situation to where you can find the owner. And the shelters, I'll just say, like City of Tyler does a great job. I mean, what if you took an animal there, they'll try to find the owner. If a person loses an animal in the city, that's where they're going to call. and they'll do everything to matchmake. They will also then require, when the people come to pick up, the owners, that they microchip the animal. So therefore, that animal can, if it gets out again for whatever accident or whatever reason, then it would be chipped and you could track down the owner. So,
Emily and Karen, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and I hope you have a good rest of your week.
Thank you.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, and we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.